Welcome, friends. Good to be with you again as we think about sexuality and God's story. In this unit, Unit 2, we're going to dig more into the broader culture's stories and try to understand the worldview that's there and the way that gets embodied in everyday life. And so some of what we're going to do in this section might at first sound a little bit philosophical, might sound to some degree a little bit intimidating, but I want to assure you as we talk through some of these maybe headier concepts, I'm going to work really hard to try to work with some examples and be really clear about thinking through how we see some of these different worldviews, some of these different stories embodied in the broader culture. And there's three of them that we're going to walk through in this unit. And, you know, maybe as you're listening to this, to some of these, you can see these in your culture, in your place, where you're at. And maybe for others of you, you would say, well, I don't really see this so much. And so that's fine. My encouragement to you would be that as we walk through these three different cultural stories that are out there, that you be reflective and pay attention to your own life and to your own cultural situation and say, well, what stories do I see there and how do those fit with the biblical story? And to some degree, how does that not fit with the biblical story? And so I am by no means saying these are the only three stories out there, but these are three prominent ones that I see in North American culture. And as you think about your own context and own culture, maybe you can see some points of connection, and maybe you can see other stories that are embodied there. Well, we said last time that different stories, different worldviews are trying to answer the question, what's the problem, what's the solution? And that in answering those questions, what they're really promising is rest. Again, Augustine says that our hearts are restless until they rest in you, Lord. And we can understand these three different stories that we're going to look at as three different ways that people are legitimately, they're trying to find real rest. They're trying to find something that is going to meet the deepest needs of their heart. And these three stories are different things that promise at least some level of rest, some level of salvation, some level of redemption. And so the first story that I want to think about in our broader culture, it's the story of individualism. That the way I think about this is we find rest when I can really discover and live out the real me and who I am. Now, again, this is very prominent, especially in North America and Europe, very individualistic cultures that sell this story. Now, I want to give a little bit of a philosophical background to help us understand this story. Jean-Paul Sartre was a French philosopher, an existentialist. Now, that's a big word. That's a big term. What does existentialism mean? Let me try to unpack this a little bit. So as Sartre thought about the nature of reality, he said, you know, when we look around the world and we understand the world we live in, that part of it is understanding what things are and what they're made for. And so he said, think about all the different things that human beings make. He used scissors as an example of this. He says, look, for us as human beings, we know what scissors are because we've decided we need an easy instrument, an easy tool to be used for cutting paper. This is something we use in school. Even our young children oftentimes get trained in how to use scissors. And so when we look at scissors, we know its essence. You say this is just in the label scissors. We know what it is because we know what it's for. It's for cutting paper in an easy way. And so when we look at scissors, we can identify what it is and what it's for. And that's part of the essence of scissors. Now, part of Sartre's philosophy was that human beings have no essence. What does that mean? Well, philosophically, it just means this. We can't really say what human beings are for, and we can't really define what it means to be a human being or what it means to be a good human being and say, here's a universal definition, and now we can kind of look at each human being or think about each of our own lives and measure ourselves by that definition or measure ourselves by whether we do that well. So again, go back and think about the scissors a little bit. If somebody says to you, these scissors aren't working well, it's because they have this universal idea of what scissors are supposed to be and what they're supposed to do. They might say, you know, my scissors are too blunt. They're not sharp enough to really cut, and so when I try to cut the paper, it doesn't work. It might be something where because they haven't used them, the scissors are too stiff and they won't really work. They won't open and close properly. And so, if somebody says these are bad scissors or these scissors won't work, we all have an idea of what that means. We mean that they don't really function like they're supposed to. Now again, this is what Sartre said when he thought about human beings, is really there is no definition of what it means to be human. Each person, each individual gets to define for themselves what it means to them to be a good human being or to live a fulfilled human life, that there's no universal definition. Right? There's no, right, we can't say like Jesus does, here are the first and the greatest commands, to love God and to love your neighbor. And then I can kind of look and say, am I really loving God? Am I really loving my neighbor? And if I'm not, I can say there's something wrong with me because I have an understanding and a definition of what it means to be human, what it means to live as I should. And so what Sartre is talking about here, and this is in the late 1920s, 1930s, 1940s, and on, is really this idea that we actually see in our broader culture today through a slogan like, you define you. Or as some of my college students say, you do you. And you know, I get part of what that's getting at. It's just this good recognition that each of us are our own unique individual. I am not saying that we should downplay our individuality. Everybody should be the same. Everybody should function exactly the same, think exactly the same, feel exactly the same. I am not advocating that at all. But that I think is a good, healthy individuality. But the kind of individualism that is often there in our broader culture says nobody else can define you. Not your family, not your culture, not your faith, not even God. That really it's you who defines you. And this then is something that we see in how existentialism defines salvation or defines real rest. So salvation or rest in existentialism and this kind of individualism is found in being authentic. And again, I want to be clear here. I grew up in a church background where I would say a lot of people were not authentic in the sense that people oftentimes tried to kind of put on masks for going to church. They wouldn't be open or vulnerable about their own pain or their own hurt or their own sin. And so I think it's important that we're authentic in the sense that we're willing to be open. We're willing to be vulnerable. We're willing to be truthful about our struggles. But we also have to acknowledge that in an individualistic culture, a culture that's driven by individualism, that there's this idea that I have to be true to me above and beyond anybody else or anything else. And so really all of these factors, I would say good factors of human life, like where I grew up, my family with its good and bad things going on, my faith tradition and church background, all of these things, individualism says, those are all obstacles that we need to get over or get rid of in order to really define us. And so when we think about individualism in this way, I think it's interesting to ask, how does this story show up in our images, in our praxis, in our symbols? In other words, we don't learn this story, again, through a kind of classroom setting where we come to, kindergarten or first grade and our teacher says, okay, now I'm going to teach you about individualism and how you should think about ourselves. It's much more subtle, but it's much more pervasive. For example, a recent book actually said that the main thing that is communicated by most children's movies in American culture is individualism. is the need to set yourself apart from your family and to, in many ways, even be free from anybody who's trying to tell you who you are or to define you. And so I think of a classic example here, a Disney movie, probably as a parent, my least favorite Disney movie, The Little Mermaid. Okay, if that's your favorite movie, I'm sorry. Hang with me. I don't want to offend you. You can still like it. But I just want to point out that part of what's interesting about Disney's version of The Little Mermaid is that, you know, the Little Mermaid, to really follow her heart, right? To follow her heart, to follow her dreams, she has to basically deny and disobey her family. She ignores and gives up any responsibility to her homeland, right, where her father is a king and she's a princess. She has to basically put all that aside. She even, the way that this movie unfolds, she even has to fundamentally change the nature of who she is, right? Change from being a mermaid to being a human being. And so it's sort of like everything about her that might define her, it's all seen as an obstacle that she has to overcome and get out of the way. And so as the movie progresses, you see how this unfolds. Part of what's interesting is actually to compare Disney's version of The Little Mermaid to the actual original story of The Little Mermaid by Hans Christian Andersen. And part of the point of this story, actually, originally, it did not go like the Disney movie went. In fact, some of the things are similar, but the original story of The Little Mermaid actually ends with the Little Mermaid, because she's trying to become human, but she fails in this quest. She dissolves and turns into sea foam. It's kind of a gruesome story for bedtime reading for young children, but part of the point of the original story is you actually need to learn to accept certain things about your limits and about who you are, and rather than just rejecting all that and trying to overcome that and see those things as obstacles, you need to live into the limits that in some way define us as human beings. And so it's very different from the Disney version, which is essentially follow your heart, and if that hurts your family or loved ones or it even sort of changes the nature of who you are physically, whatever that means, you pursue that because you should always follow your dreams, follow your heart. You define you. So we have to understand then that this story, the story of individualism, shows up a lot in how we think about ourselves in the broader culture. So when we think about our sexuality, for example, our sexual identity, a lot of that revolves around nobody else can tell me who I am. That when I think about my sexual identity, when I think about my gender identity, when I think about should I stay married or should I get divorced, a lot of those questions revolve around this idea that, well, search yourself, ask yourself, and do what seems best to you. Do what really feels right to you. And in that way, the number one rule is just be authentic. And if you're authentic, it doesn't really matter how many people you hurt. It doesn't matter maybe what responsibilities you leave behind. The important thing is that you're content with who you are. And so we have to recognize as Christians, when we think about the story of our sexuality, that this is a big story that's out there in our broader culture. But this is not the Christian story. And so we need to be in tune with the way that this story gets communicated to us in a variety of ways so that we can be vigilant about understanding Scripture and what Scripture is calling us to do versus listening to this other cultural story that's telling us what to do. So that's just a brief summary of the story of individualism and what that means. In the next video, we're going to think a little bit more about a very popular story, and that is the story of romance. So we'll pick that up next time. Until then, blessings.